A while back in time, while exploring southern New Brunswick, we spent time in St. Andrews-by-the-Sea, where we met up with David Welch, the owner of Fundy Tide Runners. We joined David for a whale-watching expedition on board one of his Zodiacs. Come along and join David Welch for an exploration of the amazing diversity of whales in the Bay of Fundy. I'm your host, Tom Wilmer.
Seeing the minke coming up now, a good size one. They grow to about a maximum of 30 feet. These finbacks can get up to 80 feet. You may have noticed that the wind is breezier than what the forecast was for. It's luck that we do have whales inside here. And we've also got all sorts of other things to see in this area. There's that minke whale again. They're both baleen whales, meaning they have baleen as a structure, a tooth structure in their mouth. In fact, the minke and the finback, if the minke could grow another 30 feet, he'd look just like a finback.
My name is David Welch. I'm the co-owner with my wife Sandra Welch of Fundy Tide Runners Whale Watching and Nature Tours in St. Andrews-by-the-Sea, New Brunswick. We offer a two-hour whale watching excursion on a rigid-hulled inflatable known as a Zodiac Hurricane. These are specific boats built. This one was custom built for us by Zodiac out in Richmond, British Columbia. It's a 24-foot solid-hulled boat with a rubber sponson, it's called, around the top sides of it, or the gunwale. Everyone's familiar with what a Zodiac looks like. Just imagine one that's 24 feet with a big 200-horsepower turbocharged diesel in it. And that's what we go out in. We go out 12 people at a time, 13 baker's dozen, including myself. We range anywhere between about 12 and 20 nautical miles from the port of St. Andrews out into the Bay of Fundy, where we're looking for primarily whales. We've got a number of different types of whales in the bay here. We have minke whales, finback whales, humpback whales, and we also have the world's rarest whale, the right whale. You might be familiar with why they call it a right whale, is because it was the right whale to kill when they were hunting them, because they floated when dead, being of the highest blubber content. They gather up here in the bay on their summer feeding grounds. We're very privileged to have them in here. We don't from St. Andrews get a chance too often to see right whales. They're just a little too far out into the bay, and safety and common sense doesn't let us go out that far in an open boat. But we have got plenty of action in close to us in among the islands. We're blessed in this area where we've got about 60 to 80 different small islands, including three large ones known as Grand Manan, Deer Island, and Campobello. And these whales are in feeding in and around these areas. So on any given trip, we can certainly come up with whales. Last year we had about a 98% success rating in clear weather. We do get fog here occasionally, and it cuts us out of the loop, sort of thing. But even on a calm, foggy day, that's essential, the word calm. You can have fog and wind, but if it's calm and it's foggy, you can go out there into the area where you had been seeing whales previously over the last few days, and you just shut the engine off, and if you're very patient, you'll hear that sound, and you can head off in that direction and eventually find yourself some whales. And that's quite a rewarding experience when you can't see your hand in front of your face just about. I think it mystifies the customer sometimes, because it's sort of like the Indian Joe out there, you know, smelling the tracks and so on to see where they're going. But generally we do have good weather, and we're watching for the blow of the whale. When the whale comes to the surface, it's going to exhale. That exhale in a finback, for instance, which is a 70-foot animal, it will throw that blow about 20 or 25 feet straight up in the air. And as we saw this morning from our trip, you can see that at quite a distance, especially if you're backlit, if there's a little bit of light in behind it into the sun, or if there's even an island in behind it, you'll see it light up against that island very nicely. Although today we had a little bit of wind, when it is calm and clear, you can shut the engine down and you'll hear that sound, and you can swing your head immediately and know exactly what direction the whale's coming from. So within that 2 hours, we have usually a chance of watching whales for about a half an hour. And we actually restrict ourselves here. All the professional whale watchers, we are assignees to what is called the Whale Watchers Code of Ethics for the Bay of Fundy. And this is really sort of a chance to blow our horn here a little, or blow our own horn a little bit. But it is an industry-leading initiative where we have set up a personal code of ethics, or a professional code of ethics, that restricts us from acting irresponsibly around whales. Not that we would want to be out there doing that. They are here to feed for their summer, end of the summer migration. They need to fatten, so when they go southern, warmer waters, they have something to live off, which is their blubber layer. So it's very important that we don't interrupt that feeding process. And that code of ethics keeps us a minimum of 100 meters away. It keeps us 300 meters away if we've got two or more boats, and that's quite regular in the summer. It restricts us to a half an hour with the whales or any particular group of whales, pod of whales. And it also stops us, or we're signing to the fact that we're not going to chase and run in front of them so we can get a better look, or we're not going to circle them or corral them or herd them or anything like that. And as I said earlier, the professional whale watchers, at least in this area, all adhere to that code of ethics. So it's a very pleasant situation to operate in, let's say. I know that the guy beside me is not going to be cutting in front of me and trying to be a real cowboy around the whales. And that way, you know, we're very concerned that we're just visitors in their environment, and that we're there not to disturb and create a problem. Is that we just want to get a good look at them, do it from a distance, yet try and show the customers some nice sights. That's not to say in the long run that if a whale decides to come right over to the boat, which it happens many, many times, that we'll get a really close look. We've had them close enough where they've just tapped the boat, or they've, when they blow, they spit in your face sort of thing, which can be quite interesting. And I'll tell you, when they do spit in your face or they blow and you get that breath down on you, it smells like rotten fish. It's not a very pleasant smell. In fact, the minke whale has the most rotten smell to its breath. It smells just like dead fish. The humpback whale is a little more tolerable, and the humpback whale has kind of a sweet breath. And it's kind of interesting, I always like to say, when we do get a little whiff of it, that the customers on board are now one with the whales. Of course, people come out to go whale watching because it is something that is almost awe-inspiring. When we get what I call a Discovery Channel day, when you get out there and you really get the show, you get whales breaching or lunge feeding or whatever, you know, some people come away literally with their lives changed. Like, they've seen it on TV, they've wanted to do it all their lives, they go out there, and to see, say, a humpback which weighs 35 or 40 tons leap into the air just beside your boat, which has happened on occasion, people just, they just can't believe what they see. It's just, I like to put the boat in reverse when that happens, because 30 tons of whale can make a real mess. But they're intelligent animals. They know you're there. They can hear you. They can see you. They don't come up under the boat. I always joke with folks, you know, who's now thinking they're going to come up under the boat? And you always get one person who slowly puts their hand up. But they know we're there. And again, that all rolls into the code of ethics. We're trying to stay at a point where we're not interfering with where they want to go. We want them to go, and we work around their schedule sort of thing. In any two-hour trip, we'll get a good half hour to see some whales. We're also blessed, as I said earlier, with all these islands around us. And on those islands are all sorts of bald eagles, nesting bald eagles. They're year-round residents here. We've got different types of seals here. We've got harbor seals. We've got the occasional gray seal on their migratory route. We've got all sorts of seabirds. We're in October now, late October, and things are kind of winding down a little bit for the seabirds. But in the early spring and late spring and early summer, we've got the nesting seabirds. So we've got all sorts. We've the Atlantic puffin, razor-billed auks, all types of shearwaters, kittiwakes, different types of terns, different types of gulls, guillemots, on and on it goes. So we've got quite a good variety of seabirds. The whales, being migratory, they don't arrive until about mid-June, and we open our doors the 1st of May. So there is that little gap where people are coming to watch for whales, but there aren't any. So, you know, you let them know right up front, you're not going to see whales, but there's certainly, it's never a wasted trip on the water here. And at that time of year, we concentrate on birds. And, you know, you can say, hey, look, there's a bird over there, and everyone can nod their head. Or you can give them a little bit of a description of how they nest, their sort of nesting strategy. Before I started this business, I was, you know, I wasn't really a tree hugger or a nature nut, but you spend a lot of time on the water and you see these things day after day, and you really learn to appreciate what they're up to as far on a more macro scale. Like, you know, you see a bird nesting, great, but how does it nest? When does it nest? Why does it nest there? What's its strategy for raising that young and getting it grown and away from the nest and so on? And we've got some pretty interesting islands around here. The White Horse Island, we've got six or eight different species of birds nesting on it, and then you've got the islands around it which are raising the eagles, and then you get the eagles are fledging before the younger ones on this island are fledging, so this island then becomes a little bit of a sort of a buffet for these other birds. And then you start to see that interaction of how the eagles are learning to kill, how the others are protecting themselves from that, and so on. You know, it's nature at its rawest, but it's still very interesting, and you learn by watching, and it's all what you make, you know, it's what the guide makes of it, I guess. They can say, you know, you're sort of on a, it feels like like you're on a bus tour sometimes. The whale's over here and the birds are over there. But, you know, if you animate a little bit and talk about the different things, some people might not be interested, but other people, they come off the boat and they say, you know, I've seen birds before, but I've never seen them in that sort of light, you know, so... So we'll watch some seals and eagles and different bird life, and then it's a fun ride back home, and that pretty well ends a good two-hour trip. We do that unbelievably four times a day, myself and my wife. She runs the office, I run the boat, and this morning, actually, we're a little bit out of practice. As the season ends, you get a little lazier, of course, and I'm lying in bed this morning at 8 o'clock saying to myself, how do I do this every day, day in, day out in the summer? Get up four trips a day, into bed, and do it all over again. It's almost an athletic performance. It slowly builds until you're going, and of course, we're also in this to make a dollar, which always helps. At the end of the day, you can count up the dollars you've made and have a good day of it and go home resting comfortably, knowing that the 5 months there are no whales and the boat isn't in the water in the winter, we can do what we want to do and have a good time.
Thank you so much. It's been a pleasure having you share with us.
Thank you very much for coming out with us.
Quick last question. I heard that you have the greatest variety of whales in the world in the Bay of Fundy. Is that correct?
Well, the... Tourism New Brunswick, the mother lode here, likes to promote that fact. If you look at the fact that you have whales, transient whales that will come into the bay, the whales I described earlier, the minke, the finback, the humpback, and the right, are the four standard whales that we will see in the bay here. But for instance, we had a transient group of orca whales in the bay this summer. Last year we had blue whales, we get potheads, we get sei whales. We don't regularly sight these, but for instance, on the west coast where you have grays and orcas, you get very little other interaction of whales. We've had sperm whales up in the bay, we've had beluga whales and so on. So I guess in some technical sense you could say that we've had quite a bit of action in the bay as far as whales over the years, but these are whales that are rarely sighted, so we rely on the sort of standards that come up into the bay on their migratory route. Well, it's in fact the end of their migratory route. We know exactly where the humpbacks go. They go down into the Caribbean over the winter. The finbacks and the minke whales are a little harder to track because they're not as easy to recognize as individuals, and they go off into the Atlantic. But when they calve, they'll bring their whales, their young up here, show them the migratory route, show them the food source, and that whale imprints on this area, and that will return here for the rest of its life.
You've been listening to David Welch, the owner of Fundy Tide Runners in St. Andrews-by-the-Sea, New Brunswick, Canada. I'm your host, Tom Wilmer.
You've been listening to the Lowell Thomas Award-winning travel show Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer, a featured podcast on NPR.org's podcast directory. You are invited to subscribe to Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer on NPR.org, iTunes, and more than 20 other podcast channels around the world. To learn more about Tom Wilmer's journeys around America and the world, log on to thomaswilmer.com.
This is Roseanne Cash, and I'm sitting here with Tom Wilmer. Please support your local NPR station. I listen to WNYC in New York. In fact, NPR is all I listen to. If I didn't have NPR, I would feel like my lifeline to the world has been cut. So, yes, please support your local NPR station.
World Bicycle Relief partners with communities to deliver specially designed, locally assembled, rugged bicycles for people in need. Nearly 1 billion people in rural regions of the world live in communities far from the nearest paved road, walking miles every day just to survive. Distance is a barrier to attending school, receiving health care, delivering goods to market, and other critical services needed to thrive. Find out how you can help deliver rugged, dependable, life-changing bicycles to deserving communities. Log on to worldbicyclerelief.org to learn more.